Tune into Packer and Durham weekday mornings from 7 to 10 Eastern for the best conversations about everything from the ACC. Find it on the ACC Network, SiriusXM Channel 371, and streaming on the ESPN app.
And Jay Billis has arrived, as you have already seen.
Triumphant return.
No doubt. And yeah. he's passed the sniff test, brings breakfast.
See, if we could get.
The Duke guys get it, man. You know, if you tell them once, the Duke guys always get it.
Just coaching them up, that's all you're doing.
You know, higher education, don't you believe.
Luganbill shows up and brings something out of the pocket of his robe.
Right. That's been there for 3 weeks.
Like the QT. Jay brings prepared culinary delicacies. Luganbill shows up and throws a burrito out of a robe.
That's exactly right.
So. I got a long day today, too.
Really?
Yeah.
What you got?
I've got a bunch of work to do, but then I have to go to the dentist today.
Oh.
And so this is a comparison day for me, because people have said being on Packer and Durham is like a root canal.
Pretty similar.
And so then I'm going to have a root canal and see if it's true.
Yeah. We can answer that for you.
You guys not get the joke?
Are you going to report?
It's just a joke. Everybody relax.
You're going to report back?
Apparently I struck a nerve.
I was going to ask again. Are you going to report back? Okay.
Now, wait, before we get to real basketball, I just mentioned before you walked in, ad-libbed, and did your wife load up the car for more stuff?
No,
do we have more stuff we can add?
She was still asleep, but she does want stuff out.
She's going
to
be hot. If she
get
turns it
out
on
here.
And channel surfs and heaven forbid, gets to ACC Network and goes, my husband's over there in the basement, and he did not take half this junk that's been sitting on the floor for months and years.
We put the second team all-tournament plaque on the year-end show.
I got screwed. I should have been first team.
And then the Holly Farms, I've had more than one or two people go, is that really one of those Holly Farms plaques? Yes, it is.
They actually gave them to you back then. It's pretty neat.
Yeah, it's good.
Now everything's internet-based. So
it's just ridiculous.
All right, now the hoops.
Did we know, should we have known the ACC was going to be this volatile?
Yeah, I think we all thought it was going to be down a little bit, and it's down.
Yeah, it's down.
And I think it would be ridiculous to claim it's not. The ACC is not as good of a league this year as it has been in past years. It's ranked, if you look at all the analytics, it's ranked fifth.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's fair. Now, at the top, the ACC's got as good of teams as any league at the top. It just doesn't go extend down as far as it did. So I would say the Big Ten, Big East are much better top to bottom.
All right, with that said, January 9th, crystal ball. The amount of teams from this league in the NCAA tournament will be?
Five, maybe six.
Oh, give me a number.
Five.
Five. I think five's right.
Yeah, I do too. I think five is maybe a hard number.
The problem that the league is going to have, and this is where the league being great in past years is a little bit of a problem for it. Unless you are bringing in a pretty stellar non-conference record this year, the league is not going to help you that much.
Right.
And so you either have to knock off one of the top five teams or multiple of the top five teams, or you better not lose to anybody below that. And that's a real problem because, right now, if the bottom half of the league – is still good enough to beat you if you don't play well.
Right.
And so that's a problem for the league. And so, Duke may not lose many games in the league, may not lose once or twice or all that. So there's not a lot of opportunities to win games against quality competition that's going to move you up.
Two things about Duke. You said earlier this week they may have a chance to run off and hide. I don't disagree with that. I think the fact they play Florida State once and Louisville once certainly contributes to the one runoff and hide factor. Mm-hmm. When you don't have doubles against obviously your two biggest competitors or contenders, I think that factors into it. Second thing is this, and this is from Jordan Cornette after he and I did the BC game on New Year's Eve. Jordan Cornette says he can see this team being 10 deep. If it is 10 deep, Jay, that's an outlier in 40 years of Mike Krzyzewski and Durham if they're 10 deep.
Yes.
But you think that's a possibility? Is that a reality?
It's already a reality. I mean, now Wendell Moore's hurt right now. He's got a broken wrist or hand, whatever it is, metatarsal, something in his hand is broken.
I think Derek Wittenberg had the metatarsal. Yeah. I think the metacarpal.
Some sort of.
Dr. Billis.
Hand, the foot. Something on his body's
canal,
broke.
Root canal.
He's got something broke. So I don't know when he's going to be back. But so that makes it nine. Nine is still really good.
For him, that's deep, though.
Well, yeah, for anybody that's deep. I mean, it's hard to play nine good players. But I think the difference is the separation among their players. It's not that he hasn't had nine players good enough to play before. He's had that in a lot of years. Mm. But his 1 through 6 have been so good, it didn't warrant playing, you know, 7 through 9.
All right.
Now his 1 through 6 aren't that much better. And he's got the ability to wear people out, and defense is what they're going to have to do to separate. And so wearing teams out, playing 94 feet, you know, forcing turnovers, they're more, he always calls it old school, but they're a little bit more like his teams where they actually do get out in passing lanes and try to push you further out on the floor. Mm-hmm. And pressure is more of a factor in what they're doing. And they're not, you know, they forced, I don't know, 17 turnovers last night, something like that.
Yes.
Against Georgia Tech.
Got out rebounded, but
yeah, Georgia Tech's hard to play against because they switch defenses so much and they are bigger. But the thing, like, if you're bigger, if you have an advantage in the front court, Duke mm-hmm. can beat you with their guards. If your guards are really good, they beat you with the front court. And so they can play different ways. And aren't that many teams out there that can play different ways?
Jay, there's three things we really know about the league, right? We know that Duke's really, really good. We know that Florida State's playing extremely well. We know that Louisville is capable of causing a big, deep run in the tournament. Other than that, hey, on a given Tuesday night, Wednesday night, you don't know what you're going to get. Of this middle glob of ACC teams, who do you think in the next 2 to 3 weeks can make a move? And I'm not talking about winning the league, because those three that we're talking about are over here. But that next cluster of 3 or 4 teams, who are those teams?
Yeah, it does seem like a cluster.
And it really is. I mean, on a given night, who knows what's
going to
be.
And some nights it seems like a glob.
Yeah. I mean, there are – look, Pittsburgh last night looked really good because right. they've got really good guards. But, you know, they get against bigger teams. That's going to be an issue for them. Everybody's got a flaw. And so I don't think we're going to see teams get a ton better. I mean, they'll improve, but we're not going to see teams like explode. But what we're going to, hopefully what you'll see is teams become more consistent.
Like who's 4 to 8 in this league?
I don't know.
Yeah. And that's really kind of, to me, that's more intriguing than really at the top. Cause those other three, Louisville, Florida State, and Duke, we know who they are, but the 4 and 8, 4, 5, 6, 7, and 8 in this league. I mean, I don't know.
But you know, the question, I think illuminates the issue. And the issue is, usually when you get to the middle of January, you know.
You should, yeah.
And you have a good idea of what a team has done and capable of and all that. And it's unusual. It's a weird feeling that we don't have any idea. And part of that's delicious, and it's going to be really fun to watch. The other part of it is unsettling, because you're going, wait a minute now. Like, this team usually it gives me the feeling that you're going to do something. But it's not just the ACC. This is going on in a number of leagues. I just think, you know, the Big East, Big Ten, they're ahead because they've got more quality depth.
Mm-hmm. Are you concerned that it's more than just this year?
No.
Because I keep hearing it's not.
No, I'm not. I'm not concerned about that at all, because we weren't saying this last year or the year before.
Right.
And I think this is a cyclical thing where we got caught with, like people say, the transfer problem. Oh my God, the transfers.
No.
As if that's, well, the transfers stay in the game. Mm-hmm. We have a number of really good transfers sitting out. Now that's a cyclical thing. So my guess is, and I haven't really analyzed the transfer thing for next year, my guess is we're going to have an influx of really good transfers next year that are going to be on rosters. We didn't have the freshman class isn't as powerful as mm-hmm. we expected. And that's been a factor. And then we had all of this exodus that happened at once. I mean, you know, I think I was sitting in here when we were talking about, well, 13 of the 15 all-conference players last year didn't return. And I was saying, well, I can't remember that. Maybe it was ACC.
It was ACC Media Day.
Uptown. We were talking, and I said, I can't remember that ever happening. And somebody said, well, that's because it's never happened.
It's never happened.
They actually had the data on it. It has never happened. So we're dealing with something that's never happened before. And I just can't imagine that's going to continue. So I'm not worried about that. It's just a cyclical deal. We got caught like this a little bit in 2010, 2011, mm-hmm. and we've had, and the whole country was like that. I mean, if you remember back to 2010 and 11, in 2010, Duke wound up winning it with an older team, that was the last time Carolina didn't go to the tournament.
Mm-hmm.
And 2011, UConn won it in what was maybe the worst NCAA tournament final
ever. Oh, the Butler game. Yeah.
It was horrifying. And, just horrifying. And that was what illuminated all the officiating issues and freedom of movement that needed to be acted upon, and thankfully it was. But I don't think this is a long-term issue.
Roy Williams is catching a lot of heat, and I really don't know why, for telling the truth.
About his team not being gifted?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, but you know how it is, Pac. In today's game, with the coaches making so much money, immediately, if you say something about the players, they're going to say, well, you brought in the players.
Well, I mean, that's all true.
It is true.
But he's being honest.
Yeah, but if he had Cole Anthony playing, we wouldn't be dealing with quite this kind of problem. They wouldn't be a vintage North Carolina team, but you go back to 2010. In 2009, they won the championship. Mm-hmm. They were really good last year and lost all – they were number one seed last year. They lost all five starters.
Right.
All five. Or not all five. They lost four of their five leading – was it their top five scorers?
Yes.
Because Garrison Brooks was a starter.
Yeah.
Right. But Garrison Brooks right now is basically their leading scorer. And as good a player as he is, and
he's their best player right now.
Yeah, I'm not sure Roy wants him to be their best player.
But in order for them to get better, it's going to happen incrementally. It's not going to happen to the point where they're telling us the top four. I don't think
Over. And they're not going to get substantially better until Cole Anthony gets back and gives them some firepower.
Right.
What they can get though, like Carolina was not. You could tell early on in the season that this was not going to be a Final Four championship team. It was just not going to be one of his normal contenders. But they're better than they're playing. And you could see last night, I mean, they had a double-digit lead on Pittsburgh, and they couldn't sustain it. And it was things that were, you know, frankly, toughness issues, you know, their ability to defend for longer stretches because they're going to have droughts. You know, they don't have scorers to where they're going to be able to outscore people. And I mean outscore kind of like you would say out-rebound. And in years past, and I think Roy Williams, if he were sitting here, would agree with this, he's had teams that the players believe they could outscore people, that defense didn't need to be their first thing. And now it needs to be.
You know, we talk a lot about North Carolina and their ills. Virginia can't score. Who's going to do? You know, what about Syracuse? You know, Boeheim's sitting up there in the dome, got on his fans' case a couple weeks ago, which was kind of out of character. They were sitting there kind of in the middle of the road. You know, watched the Notre Dame game, which was a great game on Saturday.
A great game.
One of the best games I've seen all year.
Yeah.
And they're making shots left and right, and now some Virginia Tech comes in there and they can't find it. I mean, it's like everybody else in the league that you talk about that's got a flaw. But where are we with Syracuse basketball and Jim Boeheim and this whole ACC? I mean, they're in the league now. It's no longer the Big East. Hey, you're in the league. What about Syracuse?
They're good. They're just not great. And they don't have firepower either. They're very reliant upon if they make shots, they win. If they don't, they lose. Or if they make shots, they have a chance to win. And if they don't, they lose. And that's a tough way to play. It's not that they don't have a Vernon Carey they can throw the ball into and get a bucket. They don't have a wing that they can give the ball to and go get a bucket. Elijah Hughes is having a great year. But it's kind of like the Garrison Brooks thing. Like Elijah Hughes is a really good player, but I'm not sure that if you lined him up with the Syracuse greats that they've had, that Jim Boeheim's had there, you'd say, well, I'll take him first.
Right.
And that sounds horribly disrespectful, but it's just there's a difference between some of these superstars that guys have had and guys that are really good players. And Elijah's a really good player. But that's going on throughout the league. I'm not sure. I don't know. I'd be interested to see if football, like I watched all these bowl games. You know, I love football, but I watched all these bowl games and some of the games were, you know, mistake laden and all that stuff. And we don't talk as much about quality of play. And we talk a lot about quality of play this year in basketball.
We didn't talk about it in the game I did.
Yeah.
We didn't talk about quality of play.
But as far as it being up or down overall.
Mine was way down.
But isn't it interesting, though, in football, when we're talking about the playoff?
Yeah.
Folks are saying, it's not you guys, folks are talking about, well, you know, you expand this thing. I mean, we haven't had a semifinal worth a darn and since this whole thing started. I mean, they're all blowouts, which indicates nobody's any good beyond the first three, four teams.
Yeah. Well,
which I find hard to imagine. Why would we spend all this time watching this stuff if only three teams are any good?
Well, I think that is again, we're getting off the trail a little bit. I think college football has a problem. And in fact, I do. And I've said this all summer long on SiriusXM that – you know, the sport needs to at least feel that there's legitimate contenders more than just Clemson, Alabama, Ohio State, and, hey, this year we threw in LSU. I mean, it's got to be deeper than that. I mean, the one cool thing about basketball, you can sit there and talk about one-and-dones and officiating and all the stuff you want, but we get in the tournament, hey, you know what? There's more than two or three teams
element
to win
of surprises
the
there.
Yeah, and this year in particular, hey, there's no telling what's going
to
end up.
But
in
that's why I brought it up, not to get us onto football, but just sort of the idea: if basketball chose teams like football to play in the Final Four, we'd have the same feeling about, well, those teams can't play.
Well, I mean, listen.
Because Carolina almost beat Clemson. They were a two-point conversion away from Clemson.
That's exactly right.
And now the narrative is nobody can beat Clemson or LSU. And, of course, they can be beaten.
Sure.
If there was a big tournament in football, we'd have upsets. And, you know, like the
But, Jay, you know what? I think there's a divide in football right now of the two or three I just mentioned, Clemson, Alabama, Ohio State, in particular, those three in particular. I know Oklahoma has been four times. They've yet to win one. But I think there are elite, two or three elites.
And really good.
And I think there's probably 8 to 10 really good teams. But the elite to the pretty good, that gap gets wider and wider and wider. And at least in basketball, I think if you find one or two guys, hey, you can turn that thing in the middle.
Yeah, you can have a shot.
Football, you know what? You need more than one or two guys.
Three at least.
Now the Duke thing starts kicking in. Yeah. No, there's going to be more than three.
We'll take a break, come back a little bit more on ACC rounds with Jay Billis, including now that Matthew Hurt wears 21 and Trajan Langdon wore 21, are you comfortable sliding down in the prolific scoring category?
That is the highest scoring number, the most productive number in the history of Duke basketball. It is.
I know it is. We'll talk about it when
never
we
never good enough to get retired.
Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Marvin Wilson going to join us coming up in about 15 minutes. He is back at Florida State. He'll be back on the show.
Yeah, his triumphant return to the program.
That's it.
305-pound one technique, Jay.
I mean, you know, he could have gone NFL, but he's come back to Tallahassee.
Yeah, he's a lockdown first-round pick, and he's coming back to play for Norvell.
Hey,
much
about,
like Billis did.
How about it? We'll get back to hoops here real quick.
I was invited to leave early after that.
That's it. The dentist just called. He can squeeze you in earlier than expected.
He'd like to go.
Boston College is 3-1.
Yeah.
How about that?
Yeah, I mean, it's still pretty early.
I know, but, I mean, they are 3-1 in the league.
Well, they've had injuries, as you know, and that's been a big factor. But they've got some fight, which is nice to see. And that's really the hard part about the league being 16 teams now, is that, or 15, whatever
15.
It is. So all these 16 teams, 15-team league. Hmm. If you get stuck in the bottom third of the league, it's hard to dig out. I mean, it's really hard to dig out.
But Pitt's doing that.
Yeah, Pitt's doing it. I'm not saying it can't be done. I'm saying it's hard. But like Pitt's not enjoying the climb. It's difficult. And that was a great win last night for Pittsburgh. Jeff Capel just got an extension, and
deserved.
Yeah, he's great. And but you're right. But Pittsburgh is really doing it. But it's difficult.
Do you take into account? And you talked in the piece that was online this week, not only about Duke, and you talked about officiating and the way the game is kind of. What's being done on the floor and what's being done nationally in philosophy more than anything else. But the game right now, if you like basketball, there's some good basketball out there.
Oh, yeah.
But there's also this air of uncertainty about kind of the transitional nature of the sport. And I wonder sometimes, we thought it might be a tough year in the ACC. It's a tough year kind of for college basketball.
It's tough year, tough year nationally. I mean, it depends what. There are the old guys like us that, that lament that things are different than they used to be. Cause it's harder to, if you followed it your whole life, it's harder to follow now.
It is hard.
But everything's harder to follow now. Football's harder. Everything's a little bit harder to follow. You know, the transfer thing, it's different.
Yeah.
And the players understand they're more valuable. And so if it's not working out for them for this reason or that, they pick up and move. And the coaches don't like it. Some of the fans don't like it. But that's kind of – things change.
Mm-hmm.
And when we were going through conference realignment, I remember people talking about, well, it's not the way it's always been and all that stuff. And I go, well, look, did you lament the loss of the Southern Conference when all the ACC schools moved into the Southern Conference? Like, things change.
Yeah.
And we can't – like, one of the things that drives me nuts is when my buddies in coaching will say, well – this isn't the way it was, and we got to keep this tradition or keep that or keep that. And I said, well, one of the traditions was you made $30,000 a year,
right?
Like, and nobody wants to lose that tradition. And the coaches say, well, I don't, these 9 o'clock games. Well, TV didn't put the game at 9 o'clock. we pay more at 9 o'clock. Mm-hmm. You put the game at 9 o'clock. Yeah. You can play whenever you want.
Yeah.
You know, we pay more at 9 o'clock. That's all this stuff is. So things are different now, and we have to kind of adjust to it. But I don't think younger people who are consuming the sport are complaining as much as we are, because we remember what it used to be like.
Yeah. Well, your son just got out of college. My son's a manager for a college basketball team in the A-Sun, and they digest the sport as fervently as we did, just in a different way.
But they're more, they digest the NBA more.
Unbelievably so. Yeah.
And so that's one of the things, like, well, and there are reasons for this, but stick with me on this one. When the NCAA got hit for having these video games because of name, image,
and likeness. Yeah.
They said, well, we don't want to give the players anything, so we'll just get rid of this. We don't make enough money on this to fight over this, so we'll get rid of this. So it's no more video game. That's not a good thing.
No, it's not.
Because the kids love those games. And so instead of playing a college basketball game, they're playing an 2K. NBA game.
Yeah.
They're playing NBA 2K. And my kid, when he was little, he knew every NFL player, every college football player, you know, all that stuff from those video games.
Yep.
Now the kids are growing up now. That's not an entry point for them like it used to be. And it's just one small thing. But you add up all these small things, and it's, you know, like our audience is older, college educated.
Yeah.
And that's not a wide enough swath. Like, we should be welcoming everybody in, and I'm not sure we're doing as good a job of that as we can.
Jay, in terms of the big picture, we'll get away from the ACC a second, even though you might be able to include Duke here. From a national perspective, where is Duke in terms of the pecking order 1 through 5?
I think they're one.
You think they're one? Yeah. I saw the Billis Index 2.0 yet.
Yeah, I have them one because I think they're the best team. Now, I don't think anybody, we've talked about this before, I don't think anybody is like the teams in 2015 or 2017 or all that, when you can go, hey, that, unless something catastrophic happens, that's an Elite Eight Final Four team. Duke can be beaten earlier than that because they're not as powerful as they've been perhaps, but they are so balanced, so good defensively. We've talked about their depth. They've got the best makeup of all the teams that I have seen. Like, Gonzaga is really good offensively. They don't have Duke's depth, and they don't defend as well as Duke does. Mm-hmm. I don't think that Louisville has the point guard play that Duke has. And so you can line up any team. You go, you know what? They can beat Duke, but Duke's better. Mm-hmm. At least right now, unless something crazy changes and more metatarsals and metacarpals and migraines, all those M words.
Yeah, you're going to include Kansas in that, even though they played each other first game of the season, which seems like a million years ago already.
Yeah, and Kansas is really good. Kansas is bigger, but they're not as balanced. They've got Devon Dotson, who's from here, and went to Providence Day, and a really, really good point guard, one of the top 10 point guards in the country. And they got Udoka Azubuike, but they don't really have go-to guys around them. Their big guys are good, but they don't complement one another as Bill Self would expect his big guys to. But they're good enough to win the whole thing. There's no question. But I you know, if you remember the first game, ball went inside, Duke doubled him. And I think Kansas had 28 turnovers.
They did, yeah.
And, you know, and it wound up being a close game anyway because Kansas is good. But I think Duke is better, and Duke's continuing to get better.
So we are really looking at an unknown come March, aren't we?
Yeah, but we
– I mean, we're going to throw darts on the board and project, but we really don't know.
We don't. But in years past, we felt like we knew, but they were subject to an upset.
Mm-hmm.
Here, we're not worried about an upset. We're going, can they win? Like, and can this team win? Because there are so many question marks that teams have. Like, nobody's – usually you have more sort of complete teams where you go, man, this team's got everything. This team's got everything. Like, and now, can they slip on a banana peel and lose? Yeah. But you know, like last year when you had Duke, Michigan State, you knew that those teams were going to, absent something crazy happening, we're going to be in the Elite Eight playing each other. Yeah, I don't see that this year with many teams at all, if anyone.
All right, let's close on Florida State because they, to me, are the second best team in this league. Mm-hmm. They are also a team that, and Dan Bonner sat in October and said, we're talking about all these other schools and we're forgetting that Florida State's had this run of success. And we mentioned them the first time he came by. And now they've delivered. And we're into January and they're playing pretty well. And You know, they let Wake back in the game last night and still find a way to win by 10. Where are they in the pecking order in your mind? I know this week you marked them down a little bit, but are they a team that is emerging out of this?
Yeah, they're fully capable of beating anybody in the country. The list of teams that they can lose to is a little bit wider than some of the teams we've talked about.
Okay.
I think they're very, very good. They defend well. They don't have the size that they had last year, but they're still big. Mm-hmm. And, man, they come at you in waves. And Trent Forrest is really good. MJ Walker is really good.
Yeah.
I mean, they're legit, but they don't, you know, they don't give you that feeling that they're number one.
Got it.
Or they can be number one. They can hover around it and they can beat anybody.
Yeah.
But I feel like with Duke, you know, you had mentioned Kansas.
Gonzaga.
I think Gonzaga is really good. But there's, you know, the one team I will tell you that I think is going to be there at the end that was not at the beginning is Michigan State.
Mm.
Michigan State is coming, and you know they're not going to have Joshua Langford. He's out for the season. But you know, as you guys know, Cassius Winston lost his brother in that tragedy, and he has been negatively affected, as you would expect, and the whole program has. But they are starting to come on. And everybody thought they'd be the number one team before the season, and that was for a reason. And now they're starting to show it, and they're starting to regain their identity. And so they're a team that I think could match Duke before it's all over.
So before you run, can we expect you about 9:15 for return engagement?
Like No, I have a dentist appointment.
The root canal.
Yeah, I'm going to be mouth wide open, crying like a little kid.
Well, here's how it works, though. Wendy.
She may come back. She may come back with a U-Haul. Just give you the keys to the house.
Because the first time Jay made his debut on the show,
30 minutes later,
he comes walking in with all kinds of cool stuff. I'm like, all right. Obviously, the missus saw it and said, hey, time to
get
clean
this out of here.
Yeah. We found the Goodwill Industries over there in Doctor's basement.
Thanks as always for
thanks
the time.
For having me.
Oh, dude, you kidding? You bring
always
breakfast, you bring coffee, you know, it's easy.
Dogs behave.
The technology, by the way, we try with sometimes. That's just
the Luke walks in here, the dogs are barking the whole interview. Billis walks in, the dog's sitting here, Fuller laying on the
I got
Jay's foot.
Bacon in my socks.
Yeah.
This is the Packer and Durham Podcast.
Many thanks to Jay Billis, who brought breakfast and some insight. He's now off to get the root canal. Good luck to that. 844-SAY-ACCN is the number for the program.
Man.
Mike Norvell is your new football coach at Florida State. And already hot on the recruiting trail by bringing guys back that we thought
he's already
would be going
signed
to
his
the
two
NFL.
Biggest. Right. In my opinion, his two biggest recruits were on the team last year, and they're coming back this year.
And one of them joins us now
for
a return engagement.
How excited are we to bring? Come on now, 21. Give me a smile this morning.
Yes,
I know you're ready.
How you doing? How you doing? I'm doing great. How you guys doing?
Man, Marvin Wilson is.
We can't complain.
Dude, you know what? You're one of our favorites because we had such a good time the first visit you had with us. And then you decided to come back, and I got to be honest, Marvin, Pac and I were stunned. I mean, what led to this?
What led to it is I just can't leave on the note. Just with the high season has went, I feel like we got to rep the spirit a lot better. I feel like we got to come out and dominate the football field, and we didn't do that the last couple of years. And I just can't leave Florida State knowing I got an extra year left, and I just want to come out and give it my all one last year.
Boy, I love that answer because I was concerned that you were going to say, you know what, I had such a good time on Packer and Durham, I didn't want to go to the NFL without coming back on that show and do another interview. All right, so let's get right to it. Why in the world would a man of your size, your skill, your technique, your passion, your determination be afraid to wrestle an alligator?
I just can't do it. I don't want to go in no environment where I can't control where my fate is. Going in the water and stuff like that, I can't do it.
No, I don't blame you. You know, I got a theory, Marvin, and not necessarily with the swamp, but with the ocean, that the second your big toe hits the water, you're the visiting team.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Right? Yep.
Definitely.
That's right.
It's good to see you guys are bonding on this because Packer's been living that theory for as long as I've known him. Okay, I want to come back to the Mike Norvell meeting. And I know Coach Odell had to be involved in this somehow too because I know your bond with Coach Odell is pretty tight, right?
Yes, sir.
So take me through the meeting with Mike Norvell, and I'm guessing Coach Odell was there, and how that led Marvin Wilson to come back. What was said in that meeting you can share with us about with Coach Norvell?
Really, it was just his passion, you know, coming in. He was honest with me. He showed me his vision for Florida State, the things that the guys that he was going to bring in, the different coaches and stuff like that he wants. He showed me his vision for Florida State, and it really caught my eyes and my attention and made me really want to come back because I already had thoughts about coming back. I really wanted to really focus on the league. I really was focused on finishing out what I started at Florida State. And when he came in, he checked off every box that I wanted in a head coach, and I believe in him, and I'm ready to go do it.
Did you help recruit Tamarian, or did he recruit you?
No, we really talked about it together. A couple other guys that was in our class, we all were just sitting around talking about how we can change this. You know, really, we just sat down and was like, we're not finished. We got to finish where we started, and we got to get back on top and represent the Spirit the right way.
Marvin, I love the fact that you love being in college. You know, we see so many times where guys are chasing their dream, and I got no problem with somebody that says, hey, listen, I want to play in the NFL or the NBA or Major League Baseball or whatever it is. And they leave college early to pursue the dream and get paid a ton of money, fame, and fortune. But you know what? It does say something, the fact that, hey, you know what? I love college life. I love what it's all about. Mm-hmm. I love the camaraderie with the guys in the locker room, you know, staying together to win a championship. And I applaud you for it, because it would have been really easy to say, you know what? I've done all I can do here at Florida State. I'm going to go ahead and take care of me now in the NFL. So good for you for chasing what your dream is and staying at Florida State. I love it.
Definitely. It's easy to do that, just go off in the league, just be selfish, go off making a lot of money. It's hard to be a leader through tough times. It's hard to come back when everybody doesn't see you're going to be successful. So right now, we just got our heads down right now. We're grinding, coming in, putting in work every day. Coach Norvell said try to get 1% better every single day, and that's what we're trying to do, just get 1% better. Just stack those good days on top of good days and keep working.
Marvin, what did you find out from the NFL, though, in terms of, hey, because I know you had to get at least a lay of the land of where I stood in the big picture, whether it be the NFL or coming back to Florida State. What did the NFL people tell you?
They told me I was a first-round draft pick, but that really didn't matter to me. I really didn't care at that point. By the time I got my grade back and stuff like that, I wasn't even thinking about it anymore. I was already locked in. I had made my decision in my head, and so I just really wanted to just come back and finish what I started.
Marvin, you said a minute ago, and I want to go back and reiterate this. I happened to be doing the Boston College game, and that was the week that you weren't going to be able to finish the season with the injury. And I know that was tough because you got that bond with Coach Odell Higgins, and I know that was important to you. How much did not playing the back end of the season impact coming back?
It really hurt, you know, not being out there with my brothers, you know, just not being able to go to war with them, not being able to motivate them, being a fan with them, you know, every step of the way, you know, and helping Coach Odell take over and finish the season out. It really did bother me, but every inch of the way I was trying to support. I woke up early that morning on game days. When they got up at 7 o'clock, I was up at 7 o'clock texting everybody, you know, making sure their mind was right, making sure everybody was ready to go. You know, I was ready. I was tuned in. I'm yelling at my TV back at home in my sling with my hand up, you know. A couple other guys that couldn't go, we all in my room just watching the game, you know, cheering everybody on.
How good do you think this Florida State team is going to be in 2020?
Really, we're going to be a great Florida State team. Really, right now, we just got to focus on working every single day. We're not focused on anything else. We're going to take one day at a time, one game at a time. So right now, we're just focused on doing what's right and creating great habits every single day.
The one thing that I think we're forgetting in this process is that on your side of the ball in particular, a lot of guys are going to come back who've got experience. The defensive side's got a chance to be lights out pretty quick, doesn't it?
Most definitely, especially with a lot of experience up front, especially, you know, with me, Corey, Big Coop. You got a lot of guys on the back end with Cyrus and Hamza Nazardine coming back, and you got Leonard Warner and different guys on our linebacker crew, and with Emmett Rice, really just really come out and really play lights out from day one. And I'm not talking about day one on the game day, I'm talking about in fall camp. Really not even fall camp, spring. That's where it starts. Championships is won in the spring. So right now we out here working. We just had our second day of workouts. We had a team run. And we got after it today. So we can't go back now. We started off, we had two great days of work. We can't go back.
All right. I want to follow up on this. Everybody's talked about you and Tamarian coming back. Naz coming back is also a huge hit for this team. That's almost as important as in some respects what you and Terry do at your respective positions, isn't it?
Yes, sir. Most definitely. Me and Ham, Ham's the guy that motivates me every single day. You know, just I like to talk trash to Ham every single day. I'm gonna get the most turnovers today. I'm gonna make the most plays, and I see the fire in Ham and set him off. So then Ham come out and probably knock somebody helmet off in practice. Then that get me going. So when Ham do that, I gotta go crazy in practice. So Ham really motivates me every single day. He gonna come out and work. We're gonna push each other. And another guy that really pushes me is Asante Samuel. Oh yeah, him. Yes, definitely. That little guy right there. He gonna come ready to work every single day. He gonna talk, but he gonna back it up though.
All right, I wanna go two areas here. First one, and I know Pac wants your thoughts on Monday night. I know you want that. Mm-hmm. But let's get down to the Texans now. That was a big win last week against Buffalo. I know in the playoffs,
yes, it was.
You were pumped for your guys. So now you're trying to take the next step in the playoffs. What happens this weekend with the Texans?
Really, I just need to come home with a dub. Whether it's by 1 point, 2 point, 3 points, I just need the dub. Just survive in advance. I was shocked they came back last week going into the fourth quarter. I only had 75 yards of total offense. They came out. Deshaun Watson did his thing. You know, made a lot of magic tricks happen. And I want to see if he can do it again next week.
All right. From one former Clemson quarterback now to a current one, what do you think is going to happen in Louisiana on Monday night with LSU and Clemson?
Ooh, I know it's going to be a great game. I can't wait to see it. I talk to a lot of people that think it's going to be a blowout. I don't think so. This is going to be a really good game down to the wire. But honestly, I have to probably go LSU. I think LSU is going to pull it out by probably like three plus.
Marvin,
you're not flying the flag for the league, Marvin?
Marvin, you know those Clemson folks are going to go, oh, man, that dude's back. He just picked LSU. Now, you know you got to see those guys.
Oh, that's cool. I'm going to be ready, though.
I love it.
Hey, look, I got one request for you. You have to come back to the ACC football media event in July. Tell Derek, say, I'm in on defense. Tell Coach Norvell, I need to go back, Coach. Because I'm good with media, and I was there last year, and I look clean, and I'll be clean again this year if you let me go back.
Yes, sir. I most definitely will relay the message.
All right. Marvin, congratulations,
man. Hey, thanks, man. Appreciate it. Glad to have you back in the league for one more run.
Thank you for having me.
All right, Marvin Wilson. Great defensive tackle. Florida State.
He's great, man.
He's a heck of a lot of fun. He's a blast.
And a player.
Oh, player.
Player. I mean, listen, and that's where I was curious what he was.
What'd they tell you? I'd be a first round guy.
Well, that's where I was going. The fact that he was given info that, hey, I'm a first round pick, but you know what? I loved, you know, and there were people going crazy when Christian Wilkins and all those guys came back. Hey, you know what? College life's pretty good, man. College life's pretty good. Right, Fuller?
How's it going over there for you?
During the entire Marvin Wilson interview,
Fuller ate the bowl.
Marnie Narduzzi.
Coach Narduzzi's dog.
The treats that Marnie Narduzzi sent.
Yeah.
This thing was filled up before the Marvin Wilson interview.
Yeah, it's gone
now. Here's where we are today.
Yeah, that's it. Empty.
Sorry, brother.
When we come back, if you've seen any of the unbelievable college football 150 spotlight pieces, we've got a handful of ACC ones that we're going to run.
These are classics.
Dave Wannstedt, Kirk Herbstreit, Chan Gailey. Tom Segura, comedian and Florida State fan, and maybe even Fuller's favorite college football moment. Who knows?
Right.
Packer and Durham.
There's crispy. And then there's crispy-er. Try our new and improved Tyson Crispy Chicken Strips. Crispy just got crispy-er.
Many thanks to Marvin Wilson, who continues to be one of our favorites.
He's awesome.
He's really good, man.
We love all and serve all on this show, right?
Right.
All 15 of them.
We're rooting for everybody to win.
But in the process of doing this show, the old radio show and now this, not going to lie to you. We develop a list of guys who we enjoy talking to, and Marvin Wilson's on that list because he's got great personality. He's fun to hang out with. He likes conversation about football, but about other stuff too. Like, I'm not going to wrestle any alligators.
Who would?
But the other thing too is How many times did he talk about coming back? Because I want to represent the Spear.
Right.
I want to finish this thing the right way. I don't want to leave it in. How often do you hear that?
You know what that is? That's called a leader.
Mm-hmm.
That's a guy that in your locker room, when things go bad, you want that dude in the middle being the ringleader. Going, yeah. Hey, guys, here's how we're going to do this. So, I mean, you root for him, man. He's an easy guy to root for.
By the way, Tom Luganville on this show tomorrow. And I think
finally, right? Lugs?
There may have been a contract negotiation. We'll have to talk.
I mean, we got to get him while we can because this XFL thing's going to get started.
We got the XFL coming down the line.
We'll never see him again.
With Lugs tomorrow, we're going to talk about the quarterback situation. Obviously, the Jamie Newman thing. There's an unbelievable story in the Athletic with Jamie Newman and potential landing spots being discussed, but also who to look out for in 2020. And I'm going to tell you, Florida State defensively, because they were pretty good to start with. They might be real good next year now with that battleship coming back.
No, I'm just glad he's, you know, they've got to clear up that offensive line.
Yeah. All right, we've got these college football venues, the CFB 150s. They've been great.
Fantastic.
And what we did was we cobbled together a handful of these that are ACC related. And we've got two or three here for sure, maybe more. We'll see how we do up against top of the hour when Eric Montross joins us. And we're going to start with the comedian and FSU fan, Tom Segura, on the 2014 National Championship game.
I'm just an even-keeled guy. I mean, I get phone calls, oh, you booked a part in a movie? And I'm like, okay. You know, you have another Netflix special? I'm like, that's great. You know, your son was born? I'm like, you know, I'd love to meet him. The National Championship game, Florida State and Auburn, happened out here in California where I live. And I went to the game, and the emotions just took over. I couldn't control myself. The game was going back and forth, and Kermit Whitfield took a kickoff back for a touchdown. And then Auburn scores. I feel like there's been a death, and I know we have one chance, and that chance lies with Jameis Winston. He drives down the field. He throws a pass to Kelvin Benjamin. It's a touchdown. I punch three guys in the face, knock them all out. The happiest moment of my life.
You know, I totally get what he's saying, though. I mean, you watch people in the stands in these games, and they lose their minds. Their minds. And believe me, Monday night, it'll be happening again. Yeah. Guarantee you.
Next up, Chan Gailey on Calvin Johnson Jr.
We recruited Calvin Johnson, and he signed and came to his first fall practice, and the coaches were doing the depth chart for us, and they put Calvin Johnson as the first team, you know, wide receiver. I said, wait a minute, man. There's no freshman going to walk in here without having practiced and be the first teamer. That's not going to happen. It took the day two. He scored so many touchdowns and so many big moments. I remember going to Clemson. We're down by 14 with 5 minutes to go. And we scored three touchdowns in the last 5 minutes of the ball game to win the game. And he caught the last two that were amazing plays.
Will they go for overtime or will they go twice for the win? There's for the win. Johnson got it. Touchdown.
I've been around so many great players. One person shouldn't be so blessed.
There it is, kids, right there.
Goalpost.
Goalpost from Frank Howard Field at Memorial Stadium, Clemson, South Carolina, 1996 to 2005. So that game was 2004.
It's hard to believe that was 16 years ago.
My man.
Georgia Tech ripped their hearts out a couple times.
Oh, Kerry Watkins, one-hand catch on the back line. Yeah. Undefeated Clemson.
Same end zone.
Yeah, that is correct.
Same end zone. Same goalpost, probably.
That's why it's on the set. Just saying. Anyway, man, was he a player.
Oh, stupid. Just unbelievably good.
Real quick, Calvin Johnson, best story. Off-season workouts. This is before early. Remember, the January enrollees didn't happen 15 years ago like they do now. So James Butler, who later won a Super Bowl with the New York Giants, comes by my office, and I said, so how's practice is going? He says, pretty good. I said, anybody catch your eye? He goes, the wide receiver's really good. I went, like, really good? He said, like really good. I said, well, I mean, comparatively. He said, what's the basketball guy say? And he's trying to remember Vital's name. I said, the basketball guy? He says, yeah, the TV basketball guy in college. Dick Vital? He goes, yeah, Dick Vital. What's he call him? Diaper dandies? I went, yeah. And he goes, this guy's the best freshman I've ever seen.
Wow. How about that?
And that's where it started. And to this day, I will say this about Calvin as a college and a pro player. He would start practice at 4 and want to be better doing something by 6 every day.
You just heard Marvin Wilson talking about, hey, today we get 1% better.
Yep. Let's change gears. Dave Wannstedt was an assistant coach with Miami when they went to the Fiesta Bowl 1 year and made quite an entrance into the desert. Here's his CFB 150.
We're standing there waiting for the players. I'm out there early at the bus, and here comes Vinny Testaverde and Jerome Brown and Benny Blades and all these guys, Alonzo Highsmith. They're all dressed in Army fatigues. Remember grabbing Jerome, and I said, Jerome, what are we doing here? You know, and he says, Coach, you know, we're on a mission. I'm thinking to myself, Houston, we got a problem. And I run inside to the payphone, and I'm trying to track Jimmy down, and he says, it'll be fine. Don't worry about it. And we go to the hotel, and Bob Hope, Jimmy had been playing golf with Bob Hope, and he walks into the team meeting to introduce Bob Hope to our football team. It didn't get you until you saw it, you know? 90 or 100 guys in Army fatigues, hats, the braid, everything. I don't know how he did it. He kept a straight face, introduced Bob Hope. Nobody said a word about anything, and meeting finished, and off the guys went. Yeah, I was probably the only one worked up. Nobody else was concerned about it.
That's good, isn't it?
Then the game happened.
Then the game, Shane Conlon took over the game.
Then Penn State showed up clean cut and said, yikes. What a game that was. Too.
Yeah, no Holy kidding. Mackerel. Mark Richt, our colleague from the huddle, is next on our CFB 150 story.
I played ball at the University of Miami. I was a quarterback for the great Howard Schnellenberger. One thing about Coach is he was not very big on water breaks. He used to say, we're going to stack the dead and keep the wounded marching. Matter of fact, when the whistle blew for the water break, if you sprinted to the water table fast enough, you might get a cup of water. If not, it was kind of like too bad. We had to find ways to survive in that South Florida heat. So we would have like an injured player have an ice bag like on his neck or his knee. And then like when coach wasn't looking, we would like go over there and put a hole in that thing and drink some of that cold water out of that ice bag just to survive practice. It was going really good for a while until we decided to get creative and, you know, put like Gatorade in there. And so like there'd be like a purple ice bag, and coach finally caught on to us and made the whole team run sprints over that.
This stuff's just been great. I am hopeful that they'll put all these online at some point. Drew and Josh did a great job culling the ones that are
ACC related,
connected to the ACC, right. And there more we'll show you. Maybe we'll have a chance to plug a couple in tomorrow and maybe packed Monday and Tuesday shows as well.
The Packer and Durham Podcast.